Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, and we
comic
review
books.
Them for you.
Woo!
Comic books. Oh, no, I read 24 novels.
Oh, wow.
Those were erotic novels, Alex. That's
erotic novellas.
Oh, good. Keep it short. Keep it tight. Get to it. That's what everyone wants to do with sex.
Get out of this character buildup. I don't care. Get to the good stuff, you know?
I don't care.
Get to the beachhead. That's what I always say. That'll make sense.
Save it.
Let's talk about Absolute Green Lantern number one from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Jinoy Lindsay. This is the sixth of six Absolute titles that have come out, doubling the size of the line. And this is, as usual, a very different take on Green Lantern. We've got Hal Jordan, Joe Mulan, and Jon Stewart are friends. Something happens to them that changes everything. And we're just starting to parse through it over the course of this first issue. What did you guys think? What did you think of this kickoff? And how did you think about this as an addition to the Absolute line?
Cool cover.
End of comment from P. LePage. I really like this. Like, this one, I've been saying, like, I feel like the core trinity of the Absolute books is very specifically... That's what I feel like the Absolute universe is. Each of these additional books is different in its very own distinct way. You got Flash feels like an Elseworlds straight-up superhero story. Martian Manhunter feels like a Black Label book that I can't wait to read. And this feels almost like a Marvel book. This feels like they've gone all the way over into... a Marvel style book.
There's okay, like, the art style. Yes, yeah.
There's a vaguely symbiote vibe to this. I think. I do like it. Al Ewing is sort of taking the Green Lantern stuff, shaking it up in a cocktail shaker, and pouring out something completely different. The way they did this. The lantern itself dropping. I like the way that the other lanterns are used here. The cover spoils the last page reveal in a way I didn't mind it too much. I liked it.
I didn't mind it at all because there's a good amount of tension with we're. I'm going to spoil a little bit here, but we're very focused on Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan is Green Lantern. He's the first Green Lantern. He's given the ring by Abin Sur. That's how it happens. That's what we kind of think is happening in a twisted, dark way here, but then it becomes even more twisted and more dark. And I hear what you're saying on the Marvel, but like Pete was mentioning, the more of the manga influence, this really feels very manga influenced to me, down to the horror elements of it.
Right.
That's what it feels like. Like a very good horror manga, and I really dug it.
I was surprised how dark and, kind of menacing it was. The whole Abin Sur thing was very kind of intense. And I was like, well, this is pretty dark. I'm pretty sure he killed that cop and those people in the diner. I mean, that was... I thought this was an interesting... I mean, they're doing some really cool stuff with the all-in. I'm always... You know, to kind of quote Justin a little bit here, I like when people make big swings and they're trying stuff. So regardless of whether or not I like how dark it is or whatever.
Do you mean big, like front porch, like playground style swing?
No, not that's not what the
swing
is. Like
a tire swing?
No, no.
When people make big swings?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like those are big swings.
Double-seater for two people.
Okay. All right. Well,
like when you go over the bar and become Inside Out Boy. If you swing all the way over the bar, you go fully inside out.
Is that real? That's how you turn inside out? Is you have to go all the way around the bar?
If you can pump yourself so hard that you do a full circle around the playground, your body goes inside out and your bones go on the outside and your skin goes on the outside.
And you've seen that happen.
Yeah, a ton. I've been there. I had to go backwards around.
Oh, that's, you had to reverse it.
Yeah, it's like Star Trek 4.
These are just getting deeper and deeper references to the things that I just do not get. But
You don't know Star Trek 4? Inside Out Boy is a reference as well, and I would invite anyone to hit me on where you hear it, because it is real. And in Star Trek 4 is a very regular reference. They had to fly backwards around the sun to go forward in time, which...
Superman was... For some reason, I thought you were talking about Undiscovered Country, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't remember the plot of that very well.
I will.
But Voyage Home.
Be more specific. We see Star Trek.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, there's a couple of Star Trek fours.
Yeah. Anyway, great book. Next up, All New Venom number 5 from Marvel, continuing our Al Ewing block, which I didn't even realize.
Oh, it's a Ewing block. All right.
Didn't realize it until just now. Art by Carlos Gomez. And this is the big one. We get the reveal of who the new Venom is. Again, this is the last spoiler warning I'll put for the show, but spoiler warning past this point. But Marvel put it out. They spoiled it on Monday, I believe. Yesterday, they sent out a press release about it. So everybody already knows what happens, and we're all equally good with
it. Oh, that sucks. Marvel before we even got to read it.
On the positive end, I've been really enjoying this series. I think this has been a ton of fun. Al Ewing has just been having a great time with this mystery, which he even calls out in this book. Like, we've all been having fun with this mystery. And I was like, I have been having fun with this mystery. Thank you very much. And then the reveal at the end, I know it's been very fractious on the internet. I like it. Like, I have
some concern. The internet being fractious? What are you talking about?
I know. But I was wrong. I thought it was Paul. The book plays with the idea of you all thought it was Paul, which I thought was really smartly done.
Yeah, because they were like, the suckers are going to think it's Paul. You know?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
No. I think that is
calls
to
you
me,
a sucker to your face, man.
That to me is the sign of a good mystery, is they laid the clues in there, they let you know what was going on, but then they completely misdirected you, by which I mean me, and they did that successfully, built into the story. You were supposed to think, oh, I'm super smart, it's not any of these four people, it's actually Paul, but actually it was somebody else. And so I thought that was all very nicely done. I'm curious to see what this reveal means going forward. I had a fun time reading this.
I was hoping it was going to be Luke Cage against all odds, even though they said it wasn't. And then even in this, they're toying and they're like, I was like, are you guys saying it's Rick Jones, even if it's not Rick Jones? It got a little kind of muddy there. And then when they actually did reveal it, I was like, boo.
Why not? Why did you not like it? Because here, I've been really enjoying this. I think the tone of this book is nice. It's like doing the mystery book, but also slightly making fun of the mystery book while having some genuinely interesting reveals. The Rick Jones role in all of this is really fun. Like, I like him being a puppet, a human puppet. And then at the reveal at the end, I was particularly joyful about it because I predicted this in issue 1 when we talked about this. Let's roll the clip. Oh, we don't do that? We don't roll clips?
We don't have that kind of post. We don't have that post.
Oh, Crikey! He's
a classically trained actor. I can tell by the accent.
That is how I sound. And I will say, like, I did predict that it was Mary Jane, which happened to be right. But when Alex predicted Paul, and I forget what evidence you used, I was like, oh, that makes more sense. It's probably Paul. And then I was right at the end. Alan's convinced me to be wrong briefly.
That's how our podcast works. Pete, how do you feel about this reveal?
I wasn't happy about it, but I was
happy. Why aren't you happy? I feel like this is a good use of Mary Jane. And I like the way it built the tension of, like, someone who knows superheroes. When she said no one dies, or when Venom said no one dies, that's when I knew it was Mary Jane in this issue. And because that's such a Peter line, I was like, there's no other person that would say that besides the person closest to Peter in the book.
Do you think this is going to lead to Spider-Man and Venom finally making out?
It's been Todd McFarlane's dream for
now
so long.
Now he's rooting for Peter and MJ, huh?
How would you feel about that?
Come over to that team.
How would you feel about that? It's Peter and MJ, but MJ is Venom.
As long as they don't care, I don't care. If they're together, that's all that matters. I don't care.
Well, they were definitely French. How do you think the tongue works with the symbiote? Is the the tongue, like, is that just pure Mary Jane's tongue sticking out, or is that Cindy? Is there a particular?
You can see it on the cover. This is the thing. Like, if you look at the goop on the cover, it spells out that is Mary Jane's natural tongue on it.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a regular tongue.
It's got to be not cursive. I was having fun with the MODOK stuff. I thought that was cool.
That was very fun as well. This is a fun title. I'm very curious to see how it works now that we are past the mystery. Like I said, I think it has the potential to get very complicated. I do hope it stays as simple and fresh as fun as these first five issues. I'm looking forward to more. And I'm also looking forward to lore with Star Trek.
Oh, real quick, just on the Venom stuff, I guess I am a genius and I can predict the future. It's just all I had to say.
Just like lore in the Lore War number one from IDW, written by Christopher Cantwell, Colin Kelly, and Jackson Lansing, art by David Tinto. Speaking of complicated, oh boy, there's been a lot of lead up to this, but the simple thing is that Lore has the power of a god. Lore is the evil Data, evil version of Data. And he has remade the universe in his image, but after the first time he did this and made everybody his slaves, he was like, that's no fun. What if I made it so that, like, they kind of know that I'm doing this? And so he's created a couple of outs for them to try and beat him because that's more enjoyable to him. I love that concept. This issue is, and I say this positively in the best Star Trek way, wildly complicated. There are so many things going on. But you called out Marvel. This, to me, feels like a straight up, like, Age of Apocalypse style Marvel crossover.
Wow. What a reference. Up,
and I love it.
Well, I feel like when we first saw this new iteration of the Star Trek universe, I was like, yeah, it's like they put all the best Avengers together on a team, and that's what they were doing. So it makes sense that they would naturally draw that to, because I was thinking more in Infinity Gauntlet when Thanos briefly depowers himself in the original. So, and that's how the Silver Surfer almost gets the gauntlet out of his hand. It's a great comic book moment. This feels very much in line with that, where he's like, I'm going to make this interesting so they can maybe form a rebellion. And we're seeing it coalesce in a nice way. Like, I thought it was cool. The world building. I loved the map of planets where I was like, I know that,
that
planet.
Great.
So satisfying. And when they gave us a little fact sheet on him, like, I don't think they're going to do this, but can we live in this Star Trek universe for a couple years? I would like that. I don't think
so. No, I mean, I think we're going to live in this until, I don't remember exactly when it's coming out, but there's some, I think it's like June, Star Trek Omega, which is the end of this entire era. They're finishing up the Star Trek title, Star Trek Defiant, the Lore War, all of this stuff. And then they're moving on to new titles, TBD. So the answer is no, just a couple of months.
Yeah, I had a feeling it was a hard no, but I will say, if they could continue this, I don't know how they're going to end it, but in the same way that the holodeck Moriarty gets to continue his adventures for years after, it would be great. And also in the same way that the DC versus vampire stuff gets to continue on in its own little universe. Let's see some more of this stuff because this is fun.
Can I share something that I'm not proud of? My nerd knowledge in Star Trek does not go far. I just have seen the kind of movies. So I was reading this and I had to do some Googling because I was like, why are they talking to Data and calling him Lore? And then I had to kind of find out who Lore was and then reread it because I was like, I feel like I'm really fucking missing something here.
Well, I'm curious then, because this is very much like I'm reading this and I'm like, I get all of this. So did you get any enjoyment out of this book, even though you felt like you were outside of it or not really?
Not really. I mean, I could tell it was kind of cool, but I felt like I was outside a party where everybody was having fun. And I was like, this seems like fun. This seems really cool. And I wish I could join in.
Well, because it's also technically it's a party that you don't really know people at, and they also all change their clothes and put on different makeup, and they're like, I'm actually sort of more evil than I usually am, or like, I'm fucked up.
So, I do want to call out one scene as a fan that I thought was so great in particular. In this alternate universe, Benjamin Sisko is back with his son and wife,
JK.
And Kales is sort of like the bishop of this scenario, or maybe the Cable
Great
comes
call.
In and is like, I got memories. I'm going to give you your memories back. He does. And Ben Sisko is like, oh, God damn it. I have to give up everything I love and everything that I've ever wanted, but I got to do this thing. And that is so essentially Sisko, but it's also so essentially Star Trek, putting yeah. the needs of the many, you know, over the needs of yourself. I know I'm paraphrasing there, but I thought that was so well done to not have the usual, like, prevarications of the, like, ah, oh, should I do this thing? He's like, nope, I got to do this. This is what I got
to
do.
Well, as I love it, he's like, I'm going to shave my head, and then I'm saying goodbye to my family and going to do whatever you say. Klingon God, let's roll.
This is a cool cover, though.
It is. It is a cool Very cover. Why cool don't we cover. Move on, talk about another cool cover, Resurrection Man, Quantum Karma, number one from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Anand R.K. This is a cult classic character, I would say, from back of the day. Had two very short runs, and is now coming back in a Black Label series. The idea is every time he dies, he gets a new power. And here we are, even though this is Black Label, this is Ram V trying to take all of these different elements of this character, merge them into one thing, figure them out, and then give him an enemy that is worthy of him. It really, I think, leads very nicely into Ram V's, I mean, he has more things than this, but like his things in terms of Layla Starr, he dealt with death. And in Rare Flavors, he dealt with eating people, and that pops up here as well.
It's a great combo of those. Literally a combo of those two things you just named is what this book is doing.
It's great. And the art is awesome throughout here as well.
The art is just really glorious. I mean, some of these panels are just really epic, and I would say it's worth it for the art alone.
I thought this was very smartly done. I like the sort of very specific power set that is here, and then the way it's used to create the arch enemy, I thought was really smart. Great art. This does feel like it falls in line with Rare Flavors and Layla Starr, yet for DC in a great way, so definitely pick it up. And obviously, Pete, you're going to die eating a garbage plate. What powers do you think you'll get? Will you be, like, controlling garbage? Will you be, like, a garbage symbiote? What do you think?
I would like to think I would have yellow and red powers. So anything that's
like
yellow
mustard
and red,
like ketchup, like condiment king. Your dream powers is the control of mustard.
Mustard.
Would you be constantly just pulling mustard toward you?
I was hoping it would be kind of like a Green Lantern thing, where it's like anything red or yellow, I could kind of manipulate it. You know what I mean?
So different sauces.
So still Condiment King. Why don't we move on and talk about Daredevil Condiment Day in Hell, Cold Day in Hell, excuse me, number one from Marvel, written by Charles Soule, art by Stephen Diven. This is a book that they've been working on for a really long time. I think the last time we had Charles Soule on the live show, he talked about this book.
He did.
And it coming. They've been working on it. God, I don't remember. I don't want to misquote it. But this is basically their old
in
man.
In the back matter, I think, like, literally maybe 4 or 5 years, I think, is when they first started talking about it. It was delayed through pandemic, and then a year ago they picked it back up.
Yeah, so it's going to be a 3-issue prestige miniseries. Old man Matt Murdock, very Dark Knight Returns as well. Pete, I know you were psyched about this, so take it away.
Yes, this is glorious. Man, alive, what a team on this. Back on Daredevil, and man, I really was impressed by this. Such a kind of cool start. The art was unbelievable. Pulls you into the story. I was really impressed with the characters we got to see here. Crazy kind of see them so fucked up in the future. But man, like, my man Punisher's not doing good, which was heartbreaking. But Bullseye was also, like, epic in a kind of fucked up way. Yeah, this is super dark and twisted, but man, is it unbelievable. Action-packed, lots of twists and turns, cool reveals, heartbreaking reveals. But man, I was just really blown away by this issue. And when you say it takes 2 years to make something like this, that makes sense, because this is really impressive on a lot of levels.
They first started talking about it in 2019, so it's, I guess, probably a full 6 from just beginning to publication. I really love this as well. Like the art, it's dystopian, but the Steve McNiven art really is so detailed that it's not the usual sort of washes of that you get, especially in a lot of Daredevil, like washes of how sad and bad everything is for Daredevil. You get into the specifics, so you see a lot of this, and we get to see a sad Captain America situation. We get see a Bullseye sort of like going through it. And then we get to see, I guess, my favorite Punisher. I feel like this is,
you fucking
this
asshole.
Is sort of my Frank, you know?
Oh, wow.
I like to have a Frank Castle who's like, please make me into Frankencastle. He's like, just give me some tubes.
What sucks is we get Frankencastle later in the stack. So this is kind of tough.
Let's not get too excited.
I wouldn't call, I call that excitement.
Really like this a lot. It is very dark. There were, like we're saying, several pages that I turned and I was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
I was not expecting from this. I mean, you know, Charles Soule is very good at those page turns and those shocking moments, but I don't know. I was not expecting it to be.
It doesn't
so...
feel like a Charles Soule book, and I mean that in a great way.
It definitely feels like he's pushing. Well, no, you're right. I think, like, voice-wise, he's pushing himself in very different directions. Yeah. I also think it doesn't look like a Steve McNiven book.
Yeah.
It feels like Steve McNiven doing Frank Miller. So I think both of them are very much Dark Knight Returns in their head, and I don't think that's a bad thing because it's pushing them in very different directions artistically. The panel layouts are also great. Like, I should have written down who did the lettering here, but the dialogue is often outside of the panels, and sometimes it's inside the panels, and it affects how you as the reader
really
are interacting
impressive.
With the experience on the page. Really, really well done. I'm very excited to see where this goes next. And I agree, this is my Punisher, and I really just hope to see more of him.
Oh, my God.
He's
Maybe
got a
he'll
lot
show
of
off
stories.
On Daredevil Born Again. Maybe they'll do that to John.
That's where I hope we end up. He's got a lot of story left to tell. The letter is VC's Clayton Cowles, so that's very good.
Clayton Cowles, there you go.
Shouts to, I think the last page specifically, in How Dark This Goes, there's still just this great... joyous splash page that we get that is like pure Daredevil. I also want to shout out the back matter, which is we get to see Charles's scripts and the way they were turned into. We get some little info from Steve McNiven about how he turned them into the pages that you see in the book, and it's really cool. Great process bit, and just one of my favorite.
I can't recommend this book enough. Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah, for all you Punisher fans, you're going to walk away happy.
I don't know about that, but maybe you put that aside for a great book. Like
he's
I'm
finally
doing.
Become his greatest enemy, a picnic. The picnic that he the threat.
Don't spoil it for people.
I shall become a picnic.
Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings. They're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Clubs and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself. Because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
G.I. Joe, a real American
Wait,
hero.
Wait, hold on. Justin's got to pee real quick. Just
what?
Sounded like he was peeing.
G.I. Joe, a real American hero, Silent Missions. We really try not to pee during the podcast. That's if you got to go, you got to go.
Try.
I don't know. G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, Silent Missions, Beachhead, number one from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Phil Hester, art by Travis Himmel. This is part of a series of one-shots that Skybound is putting out, paying tribute to the classic Larry Hama Silent Mission issue.
Larry G.I. Hama, Joe's legend.
21, I want to say. Did I get that right, Pete?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Where it was Snake Eyes, the first, the intro of Snake Eyes to the comic. Is that right, Pete?
I love it when Alex guesses stuff that Pete knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was the first silent issue was with Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like Salamander Nose is doing it, right? He's like fighting somebody.
So we're getting a series of these. I believe it's five of them that are also silent missions with different characters. Here we are getting Beachhead. As we all know, what does he do, Pete? Exactly.
He's just a G.I. Joe. He's a badass, and his name is Beachhead.
Why is he called Beachhead?
Hey, he's just really good at his job, you know? He's really good.
Which is?
And what's the job?
We established canonically, Alex established on the live show that his main, like, Joe skill set is getting a blowjob on a beach. That's why he's named Beachhead.
Yeah. And he gives. I just want to
Beachhead is a tactical term, you assholes.
He gets blowjobs on the beach, but he also gives blowjobs on the beach.
Okay, yeah, but anyways. Also, that's a tactical. It's very tactical what he's doing, Pete. Alex is describing it really well.
He's a real American hero. He's going around giving real people American blowjobs hero. On the beach.
Oh, my God.
Anyways. And if you want to see this Joe in action, just show up under the pier at like 12:30, 1 a.m. on any Friday or Saturday night.
Or as Alex does, 4:30 in the morning. That's when he's
And as we all know, at the end of every episode, blowing is half the battle.
Anyways, when you're done making fun of G.I. Joe, I'd like to talk about how great this comic is. I think this is the future.
Sorry, can I say one more thing? Don't quit your Joe job.
That wasn't worth it. Wasn't worth it. This is the future of comics. No words, all action. Get out of the way of the art. The art is the hero. This
Phil,
is
the same guy.
What I
Phil
love
Hester,
about comics.
Phil Hester writes and draws this.
I don't care. This is amazing. I loved it. I love the pace of it. I love the stuff that happens without words, the action. It's just you focus on all the little things more. And instead of having somebody spell it out to you, you get to kind of see it and experience it yourself. This is just glorious. I loved every panel. The art's unbelievable. This is a fantastic comment. I don't care about your stupid jokes. This is great.
I can't get behind Pete's hatred of words, but I do like this comic. It is, and especially it works well, like alongside the other Joe books that are happening now that are like plot heavy and dealing with a lot of like character machinations and whatnot. This feels like it is really just like we get a very visual premise dropped in front of us, and then we get to see them play it out. Are we going to get a bunch more of these? Feels like we'll get at least a couple.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting four more of
these.
Yeah,
he said five in total if you were listening when he was monologuing.
No, I was just thinking about Beach.
I like this as well. I do like a silent issue, so I was excited to read this. I do wish he was on the beach a little bit more. That's a personal thing, so I could understand what his deal is. But as is, being able to tell a story without words through the script and the art alone, very impressive, so well done.
Duke, I need a break. I've been on the beach all day. Please.
All right, I'll step in for you, man. Who do you think's better, Pete? Duke or Beachhead?
What's the next comic?
And you know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
Saving People. Absolute Superman, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Carmine D. Giandomenico. Here we are jumping back in time. Find out the origin of Kal-El in Smallville, which is very different from how it happened previously because he shows up as a teenager or approximately the same age he is in the modern day sequences of the book. But one thing I will throw out there that I was very impressed by this issue is Jason Aaron finds a way of riffing on those classic baby Kal-El moments, but with a much older Kal-El, which I thought was neat and fun.
Yeah, I mean, I this was so good. Like, this feels like the book. I don't want to keep drawing lines between these absolute books because I like them all. But this one feels like it's paying off on the darkness of the absolute universe the best. Like, we're getting, like, a real, like, you know, cracked mirror version of Superman here and the origin. And it is, like, creating a much more aggressive Superman, but with a much stronger mission at hand, I think. And with all of the like people being abused, that he is like always trying to save the day with their lives, whether it's on Krypton or now here with the Kents in Smallville. He didn't get nearly as much time with the Kents, And we're going to see that, I think, going forward. But they still left a huge mark on him as the man that he becomes. I'm very curious at the coming out of this issue what Lois Lane's role is going to be, given what we had seen in the previous five issues.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Justin is saying. I think, although I don't like when we're redoing origin stories, I do think that we're getting to something that's going to be interesting. And I do want to, I am looking forward to getting to that. I think they are making big swings in this Absolute book, and it's really cool. This wasn't my favorite issue. I love what's happening, and I'm looking forward to more Lois and kind of Superman stuff. So building something very interesting. I just, this wasn't my favorite ish.
Why didn't you like it? Because it's bad for the Kents?
No, well, yes, but I also just, you know, it's like we've seen so many retelling of an origin story we all know really well. Why do it? You know what I mean? Get to what we're getting to and give me something. You know, I appreciate your showing how we got there and all that kind of stuff. So I'm trying not to badmouth something that I really respect and think artistically is amazing. I just am over the retelling of an origin story.
That's interesting. I feel like it's so different, and it feels like so germane to the underlying philosophy of this Superman.
Why we're doing it and why we're here, you know what I mean? I just I want to fast forward to the good stuff.
But this is the good stuff.
I agree. This is.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm not trying to discount your feelings about reading a book by any means, Pete. But it strikes me the same way as when there is a episode of a TV show that's very focused on the characters and people call it a filler episode. It's like, it's not a filler episode. You're finding out more about the characters. You're finding out more about their emotional states, and that's going to inform their actions in the more plot-heavy episodes going forward. I think that's exactly what we're getting here is we are, like Justin said, finding out how the Inkents imprinted on this version of Kal-El in a different way because they're in a different Smallville that is affected by the Lazarus Corporation. And that's exactly what led him to the point where we found him in issue one. This is why he's railing against them, is because of the Kents. It's also the whole ethos of the book is about how the little people are run down by corporations in the absolute world, I'm putting in quotes, world. That's what he's talking about. So we've seen that in other countries, but I actually think it's very important to be showing it here in America as well, particularly in the present day when there were a lot of people in America who were like, get those other countries out of here. They suck, not realizing the exact same things are going on in our country at the same time.
Yeah. I also want to shout out the villains here. I like the choices. It's, I guess, sort of, they've revealed it basically, and then we get like a full reveal at the end of this issue. It's really nice. I like that it's the very tiny spoiler that it's not Lex Luthor. I thought it was a very cool choice.
Yeah, it's interesting. Ironheart, Bad Chemistry, number one from Marvel, written by John Jennings, art by Jethro Morales. This is setting Ironheart against her archenemy, Kem, as well as the Controller, a character I was not expecting to see in here, and a lot of other things going on. What did you think about this Ironheart one-shot?
Cool cover, amazing art. Yeah, this is fun. This is kind of an interesting setup here of kind of like two opposite sides here where we got a villain and a superhero are kind of similar a little bit but also different. So kind of a good face off. But artistically, a lot of fun.
I feel like we've been given the idea that Ironheart's important in every aspect of the Marvel project, from the MCU, where there's been a series that has been shot for literally years now that is not airing for some reason, to the comics, where like this book is like Ironheart, and then the title is not about Ironheart almost at all. Like I want to have something about Ironheart. Give me some Ironheart. And this is about these two, this villain character and the ways that her life has been affected by the different people around and like taken advantage of and all that. And Ironheart is like doing her best to like fight this, but like, I just want to ride with let me ride with Ironheart here. Why are we being protected from Ironheart?
I don't know. I think part of the idea was to build her up a arch villain. I don't know necessarily how successfully that worked inside of this one shot, but I do think that was the goal there. I actually thought this was the beginning of a miniseries, so I was surprised when it wrapped up by the end. I wonder if it was originally planned for a miniseries because there's a lot of stuff going on in this issue, but yeah, I mean, her series is coming out on Disney Plus in June, if I remember correctly. So
maybe.
No, it's coming out in June. So
okay, we've heard that before.
All right, we have not. It's coming out in June, so maybe there'll be more Ironheart to come.
Let's hope so.
Black Ritual.
Well, no, dude. This is not a thing that you're going to be doing every time.
I do it for every title. I've always done it for every
title. No, you have not.
Okay.
And I've been doing this show for so many years if you sang every title, bro.
What are you actually singing? Bad Medicine? Is that what it is?
Bad Medicine.
Yeah.
And you said that on Bad Chemistry Medicine. And now Black Ritual.
Black so it's, Ritual.
Stop. Don't double down, please.
I guess it's just any two words you could do it, really.
The Book of Dix, number one, from Image Comics by Thomas Healy.
I mean, Pete, you can't argue it is beautiful. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. It's like being a church.
Oh, God.
Speaking of taking us to church, Nyx takes you to church. The church is Spawn in this issue as we find out more about the Spawn character and her connection to Spawn. And, you know, Spawn type things happen.
Did Todd talk about this book at all while you were at the...
Yeah, actually, so for anybody who didn't listen to our live show, I was out at WonderCon this weekend, and I got to see the Todd McFarlane Spotlight panel, which was straight up his one-man show explaining his whole life, and it was really fascinating. But after he got past the beginning part, he was like, and then I got to Marvel, and then he skipped ahead, and he's like, now it's time to talk about Nyx. And that was like 3 hours just on Nyx. It was
crazy. People were like, Nyx, my favorite Spawn adjacent character is Nyx.
You sound like a basketball team.
yes. The nice. New York Nyx.
Hey.
Thank you. That feels very supportive of you to be like, oh, you remembered a basketball team, David.
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, to be fair, I was surprised too. I think we were all surprised. And the listeners are probably the most surprised.
Yeah.
This book does a lot of work to be like, I know Spawn at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I was
sure
like, okay,
does.
That's cool. Because I was like, I don't need all of that. I just want a good story. And I actually thought a lot of the elements here I really liked, like this. Her power, her like influence on the other people around her. She walks into Manhattan and people are like, uh-oh, she's back. And you know, that's if Pete ever comes back to Manhattan, same.
It's the same.
There's a force field up that's like, uh-oh, Pete just stepped in. Everybody order 9 vodka sodas at the...
Yeah, hold on, don't ruin it. Our next book is Garbage Plate, the Book of Pete. So we'll be talking about that.
Oh, man, you got to eat your way through it. Yeah, I do think I love the art in this. Really some cool panels here. A lot of kind of fun. Sets a great kind of mood for this comic. But, yeah, I mean, it's mainly a goth girl who, you know, is really into death and stuff. So, you know, classic.
Batgirl number 6 from DC Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Takeshi Miyazawa. In this issue, Batgirl and Lady Shiva have been taken hostage by our new villains, heroes, we don't exactly know, but they end up fighting their way out here. Pete, I know you were excited about this one as well.
Epic run alert. Oh my gosh, this is, I mean, after reading this issue, if you don't think this is just like an unbelievable kind of run. I don't know what your deal is or what you want out of comics. I just felt like this is just, I love this so much. Not only is the art amazing, the writing, the fact that we get to kind of ride with Batgirl, ride in her head, learn about her origin story in such a badass way. I feel like this is just a perfect comic. And yeah, this really pushed it over the top for me. I just, I just think it's just so epic. And I'm sorry that I keep quoting JT Sizzle and talking about being in people's heads and kind of that kind of thing. But
you like being in Batgirl's head, Cassandra said.
Well, we don't normally get it, so it's kind of cool. So it's impressive that we kind of get this kind of access, and I think it's done really well with the mother-daughter stuff and kind of like where her kind of what she wants out of life versus what her mom's trying to push on her. So, yeah, I've just been so impressed with this. This has just been fucking phenomenal, this run.
It is really cool, the very, like, boiled-down internal monologue or narration, however you want to say it, that we get throughout this book is really smart, and it does make it feel very different. I was struck reading this issue, like, Lady Shiva, this is the same person who's beating up Black Canary in the Best of the Best book. I was like, wow, what a weird time that both of these books are coming at the same time with these with the same character featured in both. But, yeah, this book is excellent. The art is really nice. This also had sort of, like, the end of the miniseries energy, and it's not, though. It continues on. So excited for that.
Concert of Champions, number one from Marvel, written by Jason Liu, art by Rafael Loureiro and Rari Coleman. In this issue, we're actually picking up off of the Dazzler miniseries that just finished up. And showing a concert with Dazzler, Luna Snow, and Lila Cheney, that also Ghost Spider is attending to just get a break from doing her Ghost Spider stuff.
Because she was in a band.
She was in a band.
Drummer.
But also some villains attack. So there you go. What you guys think?
Just trying to have a show, you know what I mean? Jeez. I know, Zelbin, you love this kind of stuff, so this is right up your alley.
Here's an interesting thing that I want to mention. When I opened up this comic, I was like, even before I read this, Pete is going to say, you love this stuff every single time, which makes me think I don't love this stuff, but you love this stuff, Pete.
What? No.
No, no. Yeah,
I looked at this cover and I thought, wait, does Zelbin write this? Is this one of his? Like, you love this stuff. You think that this is I don't know, man. I just think of you for this for whatever reason. It was great to see Dupe. I was very pumped to see my boy Dupe in this one.
Talk about predictable. I was like, well, if Dupe's in this, Pete's going to be like, oh man, I can't. Great to
That's
see
my
Dupe.
Guy. It's my guy.
It's nice to be just like read Slimer? This book thinking about what Pete would think the entire time. Oh. I believe that's what the writer intended.
I live in your head, bro.
Yeah.
Yes, and on my screen and in my ears. This was fun. I do think it's interesting. Why is Luna Snow having a moment?
Because of Marvel Rivals.
Yeah.
Right. It was just, I just mean literally in this stack, I was like, bip, bip, bip. We have a lot of this character suddenly.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think it's probably like literally all time because I don't right know that they knew it was coming necessarily, but... Luna Snow is huge on Marvel Rivals along with Jeff the Land Shark. Those are the two characters that are kind of like the breakout from that game. It might have been just well timed with this book, and the other book obviously is riffing off of that, or maybe not. Maybe they knew.
It makes me think there was just like a five alarm, like, hey, get this character in these books immediately. Yeah. And this was the first beachhead where they could do that. But I don't play Marvel Rivals, so I don't know Luna Snow as much, but I do like these other characters. I like the way this book sort of put Dazzler in this like crisis moment and had like the physical repercussions of that. That was cool. It was sad in a good way for the story. I like Lila Cheney. I like that Guido is still like being her like bodyguard. It's very funny that was his job, and I guess will always be his main job, is a space bodyguard. But and of course I like Spider-Gwen, and getting into her actual backstory, that book that her original main title that ran for like 30-ish issues was a lot about her being in a band. So to pick up that thread here I thought was really cool.
Did you see Wolverine was in the crowd for some reason?
He will this cover? Never miss a concert.
Not in
never.
The cover, no. In one of the panels. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's
But look, this cover has a lot of great fists in there. Like Black Widow's rocking, Spidey, the Thing, Hulk. You know, everyone's a Ghost Rider, loves a jam. Mm-hmm. Do you think Ghost Rider gets to, like, does he have to find someone that needs vengeance in the crowd, or is he, can he take a minute off and just go rock
I think,
out?
I feel like anybody who's paid Ticketmaster fees is feeling a lot of vengeance that he can find.
Wow.
You think he's, am I right?
You think he's just ripping apart the ticket takers at the front? He's like, all right, time to drag you to hell.
Stare. Do you take pen and stare? All right, I was a fashion school...
These junk fees are out of control, face Beelzebub.
I was a fashion school serial killer, number one from Image Comics,
you
written by Doug Wagner, art by Daniel Hilliard. Per the title, this is about a serial killer that ends up going to fashion school. She makes all of her clothes and out of human skin. She makes other things out of bones. She's very creative and is just trying to hold it in. This is a team that did vinyl, plastic, a bunch of other incredibly bloody, incredibly, and I say this laudably, weird books. This is actually, I think, the most straightforward thing they've done. And I really think it works. It's very funny and satirical. The art style in here almost leads it to being like Invincible with even more blood, if that's possible. I had a lot of fun reading this. I thought this was very darkly funny.
I've never seen the word bloodbath taken so literally. So shouts to that. And also, like, I thought the title being I Was a Fashion School Serial Killer is very funny to me, because it's more like I'm a serial killer who decided to go to fashion school is actually the the premise of the book. We don't get a real build up. She's like, I kill people for their skin. And I also don't just mess around. I already did that.
I already
Yes, I've done that. I'm wearing skin. Suckers.
I think that's what's great about the title, is because it like opens up and then someone's like, hey, oh man, I love your jacket. What is that? Leather? And she's just like, yeah, it's leather. And I'm like, oh, this is so creepy. But I think the title does such a great job of like really kind of hitting you over the head so you know how creepy this is going
to
get.
Yeah, I mean, just to bounce off of and extrapolate a little bit of what Justin's saying here, I think usually what you expect with this sort of thing is like, I was a normal girl who got to New York and then I was driven to make my clothes out of human skin. Instead, it's like, yeah, you know, you want the human skin stuff. Let's just get to that and make it fun.
I agree. And then the other thing that I thought was a really nice sort of flip of expectations is you expect a lot of these stories to be where the serial killer is the main character, your Dexters, things like that, is like, oh no, they have to figure out how to get away with it. And this, she's like, I just do this. And then if I get caught, I don't care. So she's like, I'm going to keep doing this in public when I want, and then wear the clothes. And people are like, ooh, what are you wearing? She's like, you, my classmate right now, who was here a minute ago. And it's like, okay, let's go.
I do think, like Dexter, she is killing, like, bad people. You know what I mean? Like, she's picking off, like...
If you want to tell yourself that, I guess that's
it. Yes, this is Punisher-coded, right, what you're talking about.
Whatever. I'm just saying that, like, Dexter had a code. She seems to have somewhat of a code, although it's very loose. I do think that, like... This is cool because there is a Fashion Institute of Technology, and this is kind of like a different twist on that a little bit. So, yeah, I think this is an interesting setup and really well executed.
See, Pete loves this because he's wearing human leather pants right now, just for you guys listening. Nope. He was showing them off earlier, and they're lovely. And you might think they're too tight. They're not. It's great to see your whole body.
Well, that's the thing, is human skin pants don't actually chafe because it's like having a second pair of legs. It's great.
Exactly. It's beautiful.
You're wearing legs on your legs.
What?
He's got legs and he knows how to use them. That's what I always say about Pete.
Not to go a conversation back, but Pete, if the Punisher started skinning people and making his skull shirts out of them, or like bullets out of bones or something like that, how would you feel about that?
I don't know, man. It seems like it's hard with the Punisher because it's already kind of fucked up, you know? So it's like, well, do you want to get even more fucked up? And it's like, I don't.
But here's the thing, is how does he afford all of those guns and everything, right? Like, probably he should use every part of the buffalo, as they say, and turn the mobsters into, like, bone guns with bone bullets that he can fire.
That's
and wear them. He could wear them.
I just feel like I don't think the technology is there for bone guns, but all right.
I think it's there. You can do
technology
the work.
Technology isn't there yet to use bones as weapons. Maybe someday.
Yeah. Maybe someday. You know what I mean? Not
Pete is,
you know?
Pete is funding a team of Neanderthals who are working on timeless around the clock to make that happen.
We break code on fire. No, that's not what I want. I want bone weapons, okay? You get rid of that fire, you come back with bone weapons. Pete, we make wheel for you. It moves. No!
No. Weapons! I have wheel. I need bone gun. Pete, what if, if the Punisher, he killed someone who, didn't pay their phone bill or whatever, the people he's getting revenge on for you. Like, if he did that and turned them into shirts, that'd be cool with you, right? A real criminal.
Cool, yeah. I'm excited to talk about the next comic.
Oh, okay. Let's move on then. Birds of Prey, number 20 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sammy Basri. In this issue, the team is breaking into several different factions to go investigate different mysteries. Or are they different mysteries?
I guess
we'll find out. Turns out somebody is trying to eliminate the Birds of Prey. They have become. Looks like the Birds of Prey have become prey.
They're the official Birds of Prey.
Well, you went to Cornell. I do think that this
didn't
is
learn anything there.
Yeah, apparently not. I think that this is just an unbelievable run. This Birds of Prey run has been epic and unbelievable, and the art's unbelievable, and the action is great. And I don't have the words to describe how awesome this is, but I'm having a blast with this book, and it continues in this issue.
This book is always just doing the work. It's like all the characters are so perfectly positioned. They're playing the games. They're being fun. The missions are like, well, this is going to be a problem. It's a trap, right? They're like, it's a series of traps, actually. And they're like, okay, here we go. And we do it, and it is fun, and great superhero action, beautiful art. This is like the most consistently excellent comic on the stands.
I agree. That well said. Also, spoilers, but even Batman was so sweet when he showed up in this. He was like, oh, you guys got this? Oh, my bad. Just follow up with me. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that was a nice scene. I like that a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe One Last Time, number one from Marvel, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Dalibor Telesic. This is the third in a trilogy of Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. This time, it's going throughout the multiverse, and we get to see Pete's favorite character.
Oh, boy. You fucking
the
asshole.
Real Punisher. By the Punisher, Frankie Castle. And that was the highlight of the book, right, Pete?
Nope.
Well, what did you think about this?
Well, first off, this is, just kind of a... Colin Bunn has great ideas and kind of like gets to do all these kind of fun things like, Marvel versus Zombies, and then the Deadpool Kills Marvel Universe here. So I think that he's got an amazing writer and writes amazing comics. The art is fantastic. But I do feel that his Deadpool voice is a little weird for me. But that pulls me out of the story a little bit.
Well, I think that's part of the story, actually, is what I think.
Okay.
Based on what's happening in this story, it feels like we're going to get some sort of reveal or something's going to happen, because I think this Deadpool, there's a twist that happens in this comic where Deadpool gets multiple voices suddenly happen. Yeah. But they're not there at the beginning. So I do think that's part of the story that's being told here. So I understand. I think it makes sense why it's different.
Yeah, I've ran into this issue before where Colin Bunn has written for Deadpool.
All right.
Do you feel like maybe the Frankencastle thing was also upsetting?
Do you think maybe the Frankencastle thing kind of made me sour and then lashing out by saying stuff like this?
I think you're lashing out. That's right.
There is a story reason. I think part of it is he's been heavily damaged by killing the Marvel Universe twice so far, that being asked to do it a third time. So that's part of the story that's going on here. I really like the idea that he's killing all these variants of these characters. Yeah. I think that's very fun.
When Frank Castle Frankencastle says, "Gonna rip your head off, Wade," at the same time he's slicing both of his arms off. That was awesome.
Yeah. So we get that. We're going to get Cap Wolf next issue. We got to see World War Hulk style Hulk, among other things. So very fun. I thought this was fun. And I did like it when his voices came back. I thought that was nicely done. And like you said, there's a good twist at the end as well.
And I feel like there's a sort of a larger idea about the degradation that happens when you have so many alternate characters running around. We get a scene of like a 100 Deadpools murdered who won't take on this job, and he decides to take it on.
So yeah, like, you would think that would be a deterrent, seeing all those dead yous. You know, you might be like, well, I don't want to do this.
But no, I think that makes him take the job. He wants to die.
Hang on, there was one more cameo in here that I thought was really funny. I'm trying to find it.
The Daredevil?
Shadowland Daredevil?
No, it wasn't that.
Deadpool? Was it Deadpool?
Oh, it's probably Deadpool. He's in it.
Yeah, he's in it a couple of times.
Sure is.
Well, why don't we come back to you? Pastime number one from Bad Cave Studios, written by Joe Harris, art by Russell Olson. Per the title, great pun going on here. It is a baseball book that has vampires in it from back in the day. We are getting an investigator who's trying to find out what happened at this vampire baseball game, and we get to see a little bit of it here. You guys are baseball fans. What'd you think?
That's right. It's the start of the new season, Alex. It's an exciting time to be alive. See, there's your stupid sports jokes that you do. It's weird because you made a very specific reference, like you know sports, when normally you do the opposite joke. So
yeah, when he's like, no sports.
Yeah.
No sports. Beach.
Yeah. I do think this is interesting because there's a lot of kind of, you know, we got vampires at play, but we're talking about baseball. So it's like, oh, I wonder this whole time if vampires have been a big part of baseball and we didn't even know it. So that's kind of
aren't
a
they
fun
the guys who call the plays and like tell when people are out or whatever?
Yeah, the umpires are the vampire.
Oh, umpires. I got that wrong.
Yeah, not vampire, umpire.
Both sleep in coffins. They both sleep in coffins.
Yeah, and you can only kill an umpire by a stake through the heart.
Yeah. A lot of umpires die after they have multiple stakes that crush their hearts after years of clogged arteries.
That's a little too real, man. Let's get a little,
that's the realities that this book, I think, is tackling. Guys, get your cholesterol tested. This is fun. I like that we're getting sort of the multi-timeline aspect here of, like, the past and the present, the quote-unquote present happening with the vampire logic behind it.
Yeah. Great. All right. Justice League, The Atom Project, number four from DC Comics, written by Ryan Parrott and John Ridley, art by Mike Perkins. In this issue, per the cover, Major Force is taking on Captain Atom. While back in the day, we're finding out more about how the Atoms broke with Captain Atom and get some teases about what's going to happen next. What do you guys think about this issue?
Well, yeah, a lot of cool fight scenes in this, tons of action. I thought this was interesting-ish. It gets a little goopy gross towards the end, but yeah, I thought this was cool.
I really like this. I've been talking about how this comic and the Challengers of the Unknown and a lot of the other books that feel sort of a bit like side books to the main DC continuity. But they're actually not. I think these are the ones carrying the story that was started in the All In special forward in a way. And this one feels like it's a tense comic, and we're like having, you know, these big sort of dumb fights between Major Force and the Atom. But there's actually a lot underlying action happen. And the way that the DC power sets are used is changing actually a lot. The way that they're sort of movable and the Atom is able to sort of take them on and is a nexus for all of this. Like, it's really interesting stuff. I don't know. This feels like essential reading to me, and I think it's important to read this as the stories are going forward. I think the way that it's being written by Ryan Parrott and John Ridley, Alex, obviously the number one Parrott head on the podcast, but like they're doing all the work while also telling a really moody superhero story as well, where you can't really trust anybody. Even as reading it, I'm like, these, everyone feels like they're up to something.
Yeah. Ooh. Now, just real quick, there is a Joe named Parrothead, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what does he do, Pete?
Yeah, what does he do?
What does Parrothead do?
I'm not going to help you make fun of me, you piece of shit.
Why is he making fun of you? It personally?
I'm asking you a question. You didn't name the expert. His name is Parrothead, and he either goes down on parrots or parrots go down on him. I honestly don't know which, and I wish you would clarify.
You know, we're making a joke, but let's remember that a lot of the G.I. Joes were made up by a series of toy designers on cocaine in Miami in, like, 1984. So there's probably a lot of them started with, like, yo, you think this guy went down on some? Like,
you're probably thinking of a shipwreck. A shipwreck is the guy with the parrot.
Okay.
See, and here's the thing. Alex is making a joke, but you have a real answer. And you're mad about saying it, but you have to say it. That's part of our social compact here. There is a guy who's not named Parrothead, but his name is Shipwreck, and he has a parrot. So that's real. That is real, Pete.
Alex, did you want to say anything about this comic, or just...
I really like this book. I love Mike Perkins' art on it. In particular, he brings a darkness to his style every time across the board. I think the fights are very intense. I'm bummed that I believe this is ending with issue 6, which I don't know if that was the original plan, but that kind of stinks because I really think they're building up something nice here, but I'm enjoying it while I'm reading it. And honestly, I don't know how you would go down on a parrot, but maybe we can get into that later. Pete, if you can send me the issue where that happens.
I think it was on the back of the original action figure that he's dating the parrot and like,
just a little picture of it.
Yeah, and there's like
a parrot lives on your shoulder doesn't mean he's dating him. You know what I mean?
Probably want a blowjob.
I really wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah, me too.
I wish I hadn't said that out loud.
What sucks is as you were saying it, I was seeing an animation. You know what I mean? And that was really...
Oh my God, that's so nice that you were able to just take the words Alex says and immediately imagine them. Take them all the way.
That's beautiful. Cartoons running in your head, Pete?
That's a level of trust.
Talking about
G.I.
Joe and talking about Shipwreck, I can picture Shipwreck with his parrot, you know, and then you're doing the
Nothing lights up Pete's imagination about his childhood heroes blowing each other. It's clear.
They had the after credits thing about consensual sex, right? The two of them, they taught it together.
They should. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur 10th Anniversary Special.
From Marvel, written by Brandon Montclair and Justina Ireland, art by Natasha Bustos and Luca Claretta. Per the title, this is the 10th anniversary of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. And yeah, there you go. It's Lunetta's birthday, and they're all having a nice time.
Yeah, we get two fun stories in this. Go ahead, Jason.
Two fun stories. I like them both, but I want to shout out the second one specifically, where Justina Ireland, a writer we've talked about a fair amount lately, because she was working on this Amazing Spider-Man book, and I think we were shouting out her great work there. And this, we get sort of the Fiona and Cake version of Moon Girl. We get Devil Girl and Moon Dino. And I loved this. I thought this was really cool, a great, like, riff on all of it and put us into... I want more stories with these characters, I guess. And what else? I feel like that's the best thing you can say about a shorter story in a book like this.
Yeah, I agree. It's great. You do want more, which is awesome. And, yeah, I really enjoyed the first story. And, I appreciated her. Like, I don't have time for this. You know what I mean? So...
There you go. Hyde Street, number 5 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Francis Portella. Here we are going back to the main character from the one-shot, Devour, getting a second adventure and origin for her. I was interested to see how this was going to work because Devour kind of felt like it told everything it needed to tell, but I think this worked really well. I like the origin. I continue to find this title very fascinating. I like how they're rolling out the different parts of the mythology. Cool stuff.
Yeah, creepy, cool cover that we have here. Yeah, it's impressive creatively what they're doing with this. You know, we get kind of introduced to a character, we go away from a little bit, then we get a little bit of an origin story. It's interestingly paced. it's kind of messed up and dark in all these kind of unique ways. And yeah, it's not just kind of a straightforward horror. There's a lot of layers to all the things that's happening. And then it's kind of crazy when the characters kind of bump into each other. We had a bunch of people kind of showing up at the store here. So adding that extra creep and scary factor. This is nightmare inducing, but yeah, it's also really good.
We talked to Jeff Johns about this book a few months back on the live show, and he had a lot of interesting things to say about it. I feel like he loves this book maybe the most. This is hypothesizing. Feels like this is his favorite book out of the Ghost Machine stuff, and it is doing something very different. A lot of books like this will do an anthology and then build a mythology over the course of it. And he flipped it. He's like, I have a mythology, and I'm going to tell it like an anthology, but there's going to be so many nods constantly to the underlying thing that's happening. And there's been just a constant drumbeat of that each issue and in the standalone issue that you referenced, Alex. And it's starting to feel like it's adding its own high-stakes nature to the storytelling. Like, we're getting the high-stakes sort of stuff in between the stories while also seeing these horror stories about the individual standalone issue characters. And that's cool. That feels like something I haven't seen before.
Next up, Poison Ivy, number 32 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Brian Level. Here we are getting a showdown in Marshview as the monster who has been terrorizing them behind the scenes for a couple of issues now is revealed. Poison Ivy and good old Flowerhead, who I'm blanking on the real name of, attack him, and we get a big change of sorts for our favorite OHR lady at the same time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, or change of status quo, at least.
Yeah. Sorry, just looking that up, and his name is good old Flowerhead? Is that what you said? It's good old Flowerhead.
I believe it's good old Flowerhead and Peanuts is what it is.
Yes.
We get a creepy, cool cover here. This is another banger-ish. Love this story. Love the action. Unfortunately, we know a little bit more than Poison Ivy when it comes to HR lady. And, but man, this just continues to be a very impressive run of Poison Ivy. Go ahead, Justin.
I love this. I never say this, but I feel like this is the most consistently excellent comic on the stands. So
it seems like you just said that a couple of comics ago.
No, that is
one of the most consistent things that you say, Justin.
I consistently say that, and that's what I'm talking about. Consistency is the best thing you can be. But seriously, this is a wildly consistently excellent comic. I mean, the fact that we're 32 issues in and the story continues to unfold as if it's the same tightly plotted idea that started this series, which it has gone so far away while still being about the same things and introducing this character, Janet from HR, that like I love her, even though she's like,
how dare you say that? Come on, man, dude, what? She used to be cool.
But yes, those things are happening. It's just crazy also, like, because in this comic, you know, the Harley Poison Ivy relationship is a big part of this comic. Mm-hmm. But the Janet Poison Ivy relationship is also, and I don't know how they relate to each other. There is something about this relationship where I'm like, are they, like, they have great chemistry. Are they meant mm-hmm. to be together? I don't know. And the fact that the comic is doing that is really just unexpected, and it keeps me interested.
You're a sucker for a love triangle. I mean, that's for sure.
Well, it's crazy, though, because it's like there's the mainline love triangle that is like, that's there in love. That's the one everyone wants to do. But I'm like, actually, I sort of like the other one, you know?
Janet and Croc.
Yeah, that's
yes,
what I'm
not
pulling
forget
for.
That.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pulling for Janet
that's
and Croc.
It's like a love rhombus.
That's a fling, though, you know?
No.
You don't, you like, you don't, you're like,
no,
you
can't
croc in the sheets, but no croc in the streets.
No, you got to go, if you're going for the croc, you're all in. You know what I mean? You can't
I'm a J. Croc shipper.
Nice.
J. Croc from HR.
That's a hell of a person to get. Hey, hey, Alex, just sending, this is HR, just sending your new intern down. It's J. Croc. You're going to love him. Did you say Jake Rock? Either way, it's bad. Well, it's sort of like you can wear Crocs like out if you're like walking your dog, but you don't wear them to, like, you know, a family event. Mm.
But you do wear poison ivy, is what you're suggesting?
That's what I'm saying. I always drape myself in poison ivy. People are like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know. Welts, I don't know. I guess.
I love welts.
I love Marvel Rivals is what I love.
And check out our merch shop for our I Love Welts bumper sticker, which you can put on your car or golf cart or whatever you use to get around.
Oh, man. You want to talk about unifying. People love welts. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
If I could be one big welt, just imagine.
That's living. That's
always
living.
Scratching.
Always be ration. Yeah.
Anyway, this is written by Paul Allure, art by Luca Coretti, and this is a collection of the digital comic that ties into the hit PvP video game that is rolling out right now. We're getting a bit of the backstory of the game and set up here as two rival spider factions fight for the in-game currency, I believe is what it is, but in the... is a substance that they need. So there you go.
Okay, Alex, keep explaining how this.
No, I can't. Here's the thing: is I've only played Marvel Rivals a couple of times because I'm terrible at PvP games. It was actually pretty fun the one or two times I did play it, but I was like, oh boy, I don't know what I'm doing here. There you go.
I feel like Alex is being investigated by the government right now about this comic review. Like,
I don't know. I mean, I do think, like, it is tough. If I was playing the game more, I think I'd be like, yeah, of course, we're talking about techno goobers or whatever it is. And of course I know what's happening here. But the front cover is like, bonus in-game spray. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What does that mean? And I also know what that means because I looked it up. But it's definitely like, this is...
What's it mean then, Hotshot?
In-game, there is a thing. It's literally like, it looks like graffiti. And so you can put it down to either tell your team head this way or just put it on the floor because you think it looks cool. Or the walls. That's
it. Oh, so that's what spray means. I thought it was maybe in Contra when you got the spread.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's also what I thought it was, or I thought it was like a costume or something like that, but no, it's graffiti.
Well, this is fun and bright. It's a cool
bright.
Yeah, it's got a lot of bright colors. It kind of jumps out at you, and I think this is an enjoyable, fun mix of characters, you know.
Pete giving the review of a squirrel finding a piece of metal on the ground. I don't play the game. This is a comic that is using game mechanics to sort of tell a story. So, like, if you're not a fan of the game, I don't think it's, like, a great way to just get into it reading this comic. I will say, with Galacta being the narrator and the fact that Galacta is the narrator in the game, I was like, I wonder who edited this. Jordan D. White, who worked on the, the Assistant Spectacular number 2, Galactica was first introduced, mm-hmm. and he came on our show and was like, you know who's cool? Galactica, this new character. He's been the Galactica stan from the jump, and here he is bringing Galactica continued.
Twirling his mustache in his office?
Yeah. Literally. It's Galacta, and I believe she was created by Adam Warren, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Or he did a comic of her. Anyway, there's a lot of fun characters in here. There's a fun squirrel girl in here as well. If you like Jeff the Land Shark, he shows up.
It's Jeff.
Peony Parker, other things. So there you go. Let This One Be a Devil, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by James Tynion IV and Steve Fox, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is diving into the history of the Jersey Devil through two timelines, one where we're meeting the birth of the Jersey Devil, and most of this issue is taken up with the main timeline, which is somebody 100 years after that, I want to say, maybe a little bit more, trying to find out about the Jersey Devil because they think they might be back. Love this book. Love the history, quote-unquote, that's happening here. And also, I've mentioned this before with this book, but I just think Piotr Kowalski is such a great horror artist, and that really comes through here, particularly with series of inset panels of the Jersey Devil's eyes just sort of staring at you,
dude.
That are very, very cool. Eerie.
It
and
follows under- you around when you try, if you try to leave the room. It's fucking God, super creepy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. This feels like I feel like James Tynion has a couple like different tracks of types of comics that he likes to work in, and this is very much in the Blue Book. I feel like it maybe started with Department of Truth and then into Blue Book, which is much more hard history about alien stuff. And then this book is into cryptid areas. Like, so like if you like those comics I just mentioned, this, there's a lineage there, and this one's carrying that on. And it reminded me of the art especially, and it's not as creepy as that Alan Moore book from back in the day.
From Hell?
That, no, it was the one that was like
Swamp
super.
Thing.
No, here I'll find
it.
You
keep
talking.
The super pervy one. Are you this Lost
pervy
Girls?
One. Yeah, it's a less not Lost Girls. It's a less pervy version of this one. I will tell you in 1 minute.
I love, but that like you a lot of his books are pervy. Like, you know, the creepy. No, not that one.
No, not that one. But there's a one another one like it.
No, not the pervy one.
Not that pervy. A little less pervy than the one you mentioned.
Providence. Providence.
Alex, you know, because you're such a sports head, you want more mention the New Jersey Devils. You know what I mean? Make a little reference to that here.
Oh, no, I never do that. Oh, not in reference to the Jersey Devil, who is a real dangerous thing. People have died, Pete.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anyways.
Wow, that was a very genuine apology for a not genuine time.
Yeah, this is creepy as fuck. The art is the real villain here because it's just some epic panels. The devil stuff in here is just so creepy. It's very scary. The part where he's walking through the woods, I was like, oh, my God, why am I creeped out? I'm not in the woods right now.
Hey,
so.
You live in the country, Pete. Why would you be scared by the woods? That's the bright lights of the city is what terrifies you.
Oh, thanks.
The honking horns.
Thanks, city mouse. Me, the country mouse here, I'm just so scared of all those lights.
You wouldn't understand. Like, why are you guys all out so late? Why are your jeans so tight? That's what you say when you come to the New York City.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I would love? I mean, he's probably going to continue this true weird line, right? Like, and do another book after this. I would love one that's like, let this one be a Mike, and it gets into Jersey Mike instead of the Jersey Devil.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. I love
how
that
did he combine all those fresh
Let's
ingredients?
Let's talk more about Jersey Mike's, man. That's a better sub than Subway, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, wow.
Wow, and Pete's here, the number
like
one Subway
once
fan.
A week. Yeah, I got my Jersey Mike punch card, dude. I'm wearing that shit out.
Jersey Mike's or Jimmy John's, Pete?
Jersey Mike's, no question.
Mm. Jersey Mike's or Quiznos?
Well, Quiznos, they stopped. You know, Quiznos went under.
They stopped allowing Pete in. They stopped allowing Pete into Quiznos.
I was going hard on Quiznos for a while.
Uh-huh. Wait, what? Describe going hard on Quiznos real quick for me. What does that mean? Like you're there on the daily?
On the
double
daily,
meals?
Yeah.
More than once a day?
No, I would hit it every day at lunchtime.
Oh. Hit it? Wow. I've never heard someone talk about going to Quiznos in such a like, all right, DJ, count me in. Hit it.
All right. Well, so the answer is Quiznos if it was still around, or if you found a rare ghost Quiznos.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I would. I'd
because they toast them at Quiznos.
Yeah,
you know
that's
that,
the. What's great is you get to watch them go through the little the conveyor.
They always say ghosted or toasted, and
yeah,
you always choose toasted.
Always. Don't ever choose ghosted.
Well, someone chose ghosted by letting them go out of business, Pete.
Oh, yeah. Well,
if only you went for one more meal, you could have kept them alive.
We were one meatball sub short of staying
open. The hot sauce
bar
was bananas. They had like a really great hot sauce bar in there and shit. I mean, come on, man.
I will say, it's amazing, Pete, how you truly come alive when you talk about lunch foods. When we really find a something in you.
Mm-hmm. What about Pret-a-Manger? Does that count or is that like a different thing?
I ride for Pret-a-Manger.
That's more of a Justin style.
You know why? Because you can walk in and you can walk out and you're already eating the sandwich in like 30 seconds. That's what I like about it.
I love that. You don't care about the taste. You just want quickness.
You don't even have to open it up. You can eat it right in the plastic and cardboard.
No, you can't eat them.
I don't think it's served in plastic. I think it's just served. It's a hard shell around it, but I think it's edible. I think that plastic is edible.
It's not.
I think it's an edible plastic.
I know.
I've
eaten. Can I get one of your hard shell sandwiches, please?
Yeah, I love. It's like a lobster. You crack it open.
Yeah, you crack it open. Eat the whole dip thing. Dip it in a little butter. It's great.
You know, you can eat a lobster shell, right?
100%. That's the only thing I eat from the lobster. I don't like the other.
Throw it on the yucky inside. Too soft.
Give me that crunch.
It's like the edge of a lasagna, you know? It's nice and crispy.
Have we talked about this book enough? Or
I don't know. Did you say anything about this book?
I honestly don't remember. It's been a long time.
The book, it was Let This One Be a Quiznos, I think is the name of it.
Secret Six.
JT4 is doing a hell of a job.
Secret Six, number two, from DC Comics, written by Nicole Maines, art by Steven Segovia. In this issue, our heroes, have ended up at the House of Mystery, I believe. Maybe the other...
House of Secrets.
There we go. That makes more sense that they're at the House of Secrets, the Secret Six. Anyway, they're there and they fight, and will they get together, and will they figure out tracking down Amanda Waller? That's the big question facing our team.
Go ahead, Justin. Sorry.
I was saying, this issue is a lot of them being like fighting internally in a way that I'm like, well, you feel like you're going to resolve this. But I will say the way it ends up, I like these characters. I really like Dreamer. I want to say to the super couple that are occupying the other half of the sort of heroes here, I'm like, guys, let's move past this fight, because like I know you're going to need to, at least the three of you are going to need to work together. You're the heroes here to move against these villains and Amanda Waller eventually. I love the way this book ended, though.
Cool cover, great art style, kind of a fun kind of anime look to it. The inner fighting is driving me a little crazy. But overall, I'm a fan of the Secret Six, and I'm hoping this will be a great run.
X-Men number 14 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Ryan Stegman and J.P. Mayer. In this issue, the team is trying to rescue a missing child in the Alaskan wilderness, and there's a bunch of folks working against them at the same time, including our villains who have been lurking in the background pretty much since the beginning, since the first issue. We get a reveal of one of them that we kind of knew already, but there are more to come, and we get a new bad guy as well. What'd you guys think about this?
Yeah, the new villain reveal, RC Cable. What's up? Yeah, who needs an ox? Come on, man. The fucking bad guy.
His name is Wire. His name is Wire. But it's spelled with a Y. It's very cool.
Oh, so cool, dude.
Well, and they haven't revealed this yet, but they posted this on Marvel.com. His origin is he got bit by that draw of cords that you really should get rid of.
Did you say draw of cords?
Yeah, that's how.
Did you want to finish that word?
No, I think he meant jar. Oh, yeah. Drawer.
Drawer.
I will say, I didn't know what he meant.
Draw. I was like, drawer? Wait for that drawer? Other. Yeah, draw? There you go.
You don't call it a draw sometimes?
No.
A draw.
Draw is when you draw something.
That's some grand.
When you open something.
Yo, that's the most grandma shit I've heard someone accidentally say in a long time.
Draw?
Yeah, I would draw? Be like, what are we fucking... dueling? Is this a high noon draw?
Are we recording this on a little house on the prairie?
Yeah.
Like, do we have
are
to...
Are you a Southern
is that
belle?
Old timey? Do they?
Yes, it is, you old
really?
Fuck. Yeah. Jesus,
definitely.
You might as well be churning butter over there.
Have you said that in front of other people?
No, that's the first time I've ever said that word out loud.
Yeah.
Wow. This is like when you guys made fun of me for an hour for saying P-I-A-N-O, which I'm not going to say again because I don't want to hear it again.
Yeah. And you do say...
I can hear it in my head. I'm playing you saying it in my head.
And I will say, that was a long time ago when that happened, but I still do hear it in my head. And honestly, it's still funny. It's still
it's very funny.
I'm not going to say it.
It's great because I'm already hearing you say it, so I don't need you to say it. But
and by the way, just so everybody listening knows, the reason is we were doing it a show which was that word with an S. That was the name of the venue.
Yeah.
So I said it, and then it was legitimately an hour.
You said a lot. We were around like we had celebrity guests, and you were saying it's so weird.
Oh my God. It was not that weird.
It was so weird. It was so funny.
I mean,
it was like,
definitely. It's definitely not how you say, it's like, hey, meet me at this place. It's like intentionally confusing.
Yeah, it was like, what, is he putting like a...
Pianos?
Yeah.
Oh, you said it.
Don't say it the right way because you know now.
It's like, meet me at...
Huh? You don't know? You don't remember how you said it?
No. How did I say it? Was that not how I said it? Because I legitimately thought I said it the way that I said it.
Well, how you say it is pianos, but you were like, piano? You were like adding an umlaut.
Pianos?
Pianos? Yeah.
It was just like, but you said it also very quickly.
Yeah.
You would say it's like being like, hey, if you want to meet me, just come to the grocery store. The grocery store.
Well, I guess I learned an important lesson from you guys, so thank you.
Yeah, no problem. This is, I like Quentin Quire, so, spoilers, it was sad to see him die in this issue, but man, it's just nice to know when I need a Cable, I know somebody to go to, you know what I mean?
And
when
that would be like, Cable?
No, I would go to Wire.
I look forward to the fight between Cable and Wire.
When I want to hook up my Nintendo to a television, I know who to go to. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have a lot of options to do that anymore, Pete. But this, I do think this series is definitely feeling to respond to everything we're saying.
The art is really good, though.
The art's very good, but it is also sort of 90s coded art. It is like. In that vein, I don't hate that. I don't hate going back to that.
It's fun.
It's fun. I like the villains we're getting to.
You like Wire. You think that's a cool villain?
Well, no. The 3K is what you're talking about. And I will say that's very 90s as well. It feels very like we've introduced the Acolytes, the Externals. Now we have 3K. And that's fine. That's part of comics, I guess.
Yes, definitely.
Take it up to 5K,
I want this. Wow. I want this book to just cook a little bit on its own. I want it to not get super involved in the other books. I want it to sort of become what we're talking about just like more intensely because I feel like it's on the edge. But it's just been a little bit busy with other stuff. So hopefully that will continue because I think the art and writing are really combining in a great way to do that. And I got to say, I really like the Juggernaut on this team, just visually. The way that Ryan Stegman is drawing.
Yeah, it's a great-looking Juggernaut for sure.
It's great with the big X. It's just like, that's just really working. And I can't believe no one said this yet, but great cover.
Last but not least, Two-Face number 5 from DC Comics, written by Christian Ward, art by Fabio Veras. In this issue, actually last issue, Harvey Dent seemingly finally banished Two-Face forever into the recesses of his mind. He won, but this issue, he is scared out of his mind that Two-Face is going to come back because Two-Face was manipulating things and building plans in the background. So he's chained himself up. He's got half a beard going, and he is feeding information to his new protege when enter the lady on the cover, Dai, who is like Two-Face, but she's got dice instead.
Do you get it? Do you see?
Here's the thing.
Oh, man.
I love it. I thought that was great. Such a smart addition to the Gotham City villains rogues gallery. A really good villain for Two-Face as well. There's a really interesting revelation towards the end here that I'm curious to know more about. I love this book, and even beyond the writing and the plot, the art is fantastic front to bottom.
Yeah, this was my favorite issue of this series as well. I was saying on the live show that this series continues to just upset my expectations, not in a bad way, but just like I never quite know what it is because it started out as this sort of complicated book with the courtroom, the secret courtroom that adjudicates all of Gotham's crimes run by criminals. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then it has moved away from that so hard. And now we're this issue, like just getting an interesting deep dive into what Two-Face is going through while we introduce this new character who seems to be the younger, more intense version of Two-Face in contrast to what he's doing with himself. So, yeah, this is really good.
I do agree that Two-Face is impressive as a comic. I every time I kind of start to read it, I'm like, we'll see. It's usually the reveal like, oh, it was the other side of me and I didn't know. And it's like, oh, come on, Two-Face. But
this keeps going above and beyond there. And that's impressive. It's kind of worked past this. Although this kind of villain for me was a little like, hold on, I roll my dice. And then everybody finds out their fate as I monologue about what this roll means. I don't know. But
it's the same thing as, it very purposely is the same thing as coin, where he's like, I'm going to flip my coin. Is it going to be the bad side or the good side? And I like the fact that she has a variety of things based on the different roles. That feels like something. It is a setup of a character that feels like the sort of thing that a lot of people could play with in a lot of different ways. So it's a really, in my mind, good addition to the DC universe.
I want
to
see
instead of it just being like snake eyes and they stab out the eyes. Yeah. There's more to it.
Yes, snake eyes. I want to see her fight Jackpot from the Marvel universe, where it's all just gambling.
It's all gambling all the time. Sponsored by DraftKings. You should go.
Yeah.
That's the DC versus Marvel crossover they're going to do, is Die versus Jackpot. It'll be great.
Everybody's betting.
Everybody's betting. And everybody's betting that this show is over. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at pianos.
Wow, perfectly said. We'll see you on the beach at 12:31 a.m. under the pier, doing whatever it is that you want to do. Go, Joe.